Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my awesome co-host, John. Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, Sierra. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good, good.
I've got my little monkey of a son hanging out with me again today. So, weird noises that you hear in the background, that's just a two-year-old. No worries about
that. I'm here in Florida. We're having a major thunderstorm, so if I lose you, you'll know why, and I'll come back.
So it's sometime between April and November, crazy thunderstorms hit Florida all the time between then. So
yep.
No worries.
Sure it is.
The weather will change in 5 minutes anyway. It always does.
Exactly. I don't like it. Wait, it'll change.
I don't really know what you want, child. You want a birdie? You want to say hi to everybody listening on the radio? He's waving. Let's kick things off with our tweet community. We've got one from Dashley Drive-By. Says, not sure where I'm headed today, but shoes aren't coming with me. Hashtag barefoot driving. Barefoot Earth Day tweeted, if you do one thing this week, play Barefoot Bowls. And they have a link to an article. It's from theguardian.com. And it's like, it's lawn bowling, but you do it barefoot. So it says, lawn bowls is the latest sport with a somewhat stuffy reputation to get an informal makeover. Barefoot bowls is an Australian spin on the traditional game with added music, drinking, and chatting. And as the name implies, minus the shoes. Now one group has brought it to the UK. The third London event takes place on Friday, so yesterday, on Finsbury Square with teams of four competing in a laid-back way on the grass. Craft beer, street food, DJs, and palm trees provide distractions for those who aren't taking it too seriously. Expert help is at hand for those who are. It isn't just a bit of fun. The organizers Will Goy and Sam Parton hope to change perceptions of the sport and highlight the fact that most bowling greens in the UK face closure unless they can find new members. This year's London events are test cases. Goy and Parton's ultimate goal is to roll out this version of the sport nationwide. Next year, there will be a series of events in Bristol, and there has been interest from bowling greens all over the UK, from Scotland to Anglia to Gloucester. Other smaller bowl groups have tried a similar concept, but found Barefoot Bowls is the only organization to partner with Bowls England to grow the sport. They've even signed up to double Commonwealth champion Ellen Faulkner to give tuition. Barefoot bowls completely changes the stigma and perception around lawn bowls, says Parton. It's great because it's an inclusive, low cost, and there are plenty of places to play it all over the country, which badly need a new audience. So that's a pretty cool new take on what, yeah, pretty much a pretty stuffy sport that nobody really plays anymore. But yeah, if I could go out lawn bowling and play in my jeans and t-shirt and bare feet, I might actually do it. So I think that's a great innovation for them to try.
I agree.
Another one for Barefoot Earth Day. Barefoot Rashad Running, a dead heat. And they've got a link to an article from the Globe and Mail called Barefoot versus Shod Running. It's a dead heat. And the article says, as the controversy raged, experts were unanimous at one point. We need more evidence, they said. Wait for the studies to produce results. 6 years after the barefoot running boom started, with claims that ditching your shoes would change how you run and reduce your risk of injury, that evidence is now trickling in. A study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine presents the most thorough comparison yet of injury rates with and without running shoes. The results suggest that there's not much difference, but the debate over what that means is far from over. The study by Dr. Allison Altman-Singles of the University of Delaware, now an assistant professor at Penn State Berks, and Dr. Irene Davis of Harvard Medical School, recruited 107 experienced barefoot runners and 94 runners who use ordinary running shoes and monitored their injury status for a year. The prospective study design avoids some of the potential biases and inaccuracies associated with retrospective studies based on recall of past injuries. The researchers expected that barefoot runners would sustain a similar number or fewer injuries than shod runners, Altman Single said. Sure enough, 32% of the barefoot runners were diagnosed with musculoskeletal injuries, essentially the same as the 34% in the shoe group. But there's an important caveat. The barefoot group covered just 24 kilometers a week, while the shod runners, at 41 kilometers a week, were running nearly twice as much without any increase in injury rates. Barefoot running attracts a particular demographic, Altman Singles observed. They tend to be older and less competitive, which may be why they choose to run less. Alternately, something about the act of running barefoot may tend to limit how much people run. For example, the barefoot group reported a total of 57 injuries to their soles, such as cuts, blisters, bruises, and stubbed toes. Those in shoes reported only 8 types of injuries. Either way, for experienced runners allowing to freely choose how much to run, the choice of footwear didn't seem to make any difference to overall injury risk. There were some differences in the types of injuries. The barefoot group appeared to be more vulnerable to calf injuries, while the shod group suffered more knee and hip injuries. But the small number of each type of injury make it difficult to draw any firm conclusions. The results don't surprise me, Dr. Maxime Paquette, an assistant professor of biomechanics at the University of Memphis and former captain of the University of Guelph cross-country team, said in an email. I think that any type of training condition, whether you study footwear, volume, intensity, surfaces, etc., has the adaptation to this training condition is the most important factor. So that's an interesting study, and it's different than what other studies have said, but pretty similar to Vibram Fivefingers. They were sued because they, for years, were claiming that their shoes would prevent running injuries, and studies have shown that they don't actually do anything. But while running barefoot might not change your risk for injury, you still get the benefits of being barefoot. You get the increased proprioception, the neural connections in your brain warm quicker because you're getting the increased sensory input. You get the earthing or grounding benefits, whatever your take on that is. And like they said, you're less at risk for knee and hip injuries than people who run in shoes. You are at an increased risk of calf injuries, though. I don't really know why. They'll need to do more studies into that. What are your thoughts on that, John?
My thoughts are, like any studies, how many of these people that are running barefoot are barefoot all the time? Is it something where they've just started and running? You wonder if they went to, take Kenyan runners or something that have run for years barefoot and made the comparison what it would be.
Well, they said they were experienced barefoot runners, but they didn't say how long they had been running.
So, yeah, I did hear
that. That would be something to consider. Yeah, take runners from Kenya or native runners who haven't worn shoes most of their life, like the Tarahumara Indians, and compare that to another culture that runs a lot but that does wear shoes.
Exactly.
That would be an interesting comparison.
Right.
We have another tweet here from Barefoot Earth Day and bizarre ways to reduce stress. They say one of them isn't so bizarre in their tweet. Barefoot in the grass is not bizarre. It's wonderful. So obviously going barefoot is one of these. But the article is from care2.com, care2.com. 10 Bizarre Ways to Reduce Stress by Elise Moreau. Says everyone deals with stress, unfortunately, although nobody is really immune to it. Certain people certainly are able to handle it better than others, either by the nature of their personality or through a great deal of practice. Lucky for you, there's no need to continue to suffer, even if you're not naturally good at handling stress very well. All you need to do is learn how to manage it better. For many, that means doing the obvious things that promote relaxation and rejuvenation. Some of those things include taking time off from work, getting more sleep, delegating certain tasks to others, booking a day at the spa, finding time to indulge in a hobby, or going for long walks in the woods. Those are all great things to do, but they do take time, and they don't encompass all of what you can do to help battle stress as it surfaces when you least expect it. Here are 10 more things you can easily pick up whenever and wherever you're feeling a bit tense. Number 1, swear out loud. Just don't let your coworkers or your mother hear you. As long as you don't do it out of sheer anger, swearing can increase an overall sense of calmness and control. The simple act of exercising your vocal cords has been shown to reduce stress. So even if you can't exactly use swear words, you can still benefit from finding a way to shout, talk, sing, or even hum your way to a bit of calmness. Number 2, blow up a balloon. You may not feel like throwing a party if you're stressed, but blowing up a balloon or two is a great way to force yourself to inhale and exhale slowly. It makes you use your diaphragm and engages the parasympathetic nervous system to naturally breathe out those feelings of stress and anxiety. 3, drink a glass of orange juice. Orange juice is a great source of vitamin C, which is known to lower cortisol, a stress hormone. In a German study, 120 people were given the stressful task. And now my son wants drink. We're given the stressful task of having to speak publicly and solve math problems. Those who had to take a vitamin C supplement showed much lower levels of cortisol and blood pressure compared to those who didn't take the supplement. Eat a handful of pistachios. Not only can crunching your teeth down give you a nice outlet for physical letting out of feelings of frustration, but pistachios in particular have been shown to lower blood pressure. A Penn State University study found that eating 3-ounce servings of pistachios a day can relax the arteries and put less pressure on the heart to work harder. 5, start sniffing something that smells good. Countless studies have shown that aromatherapy is an effective way to reduce stress. And people who use essential oils will confirm that for you. To see how it works for yourself, you can try calming scents like lavender, jasmine, vanilla, coconut, or any other favorite scents you might really like. I really love Christmas scents, personally. Your sense of smell is more deeply rooted in your brain than any of the other 4 senses, and is strongly intertwined with memory and emotion, which is why it can work so well to combat stress. 6, walk barefoot through the grass. No, it's not just for young children and hippies. Walking barefoot through grass has been shown to provide a wide range of health benefits, from reducing inflammation to improving sleep, to regulating heart rate variability and balancing blood glucose levels. And you have to admit it, cool grass between your toes just feels really good. 7, massage your ears. 8, chew some gum. 9, get an adult coloring book. There's one that's called Unicorns Are Jerks that I really love. I think it's hilarious. It's got pictures of unicorns like smoking cigarettes and graffiti. It's awesome. 10, do yoga. So those are their relaxing stress management tips. But definitely walking barefoot is on there. And I think that's great. Happy.
And doing yoga is barefoot as well.
Typically, yes. Yes, typically yoga is performed barefoot. Martial arts are performed barefoot. And a lot of that has to do with the proprioception. You get more sensory input by being barefoot.
Sure do.
Back to our tweets. Here's one from Katie Bowman. On today's hike, soft star shoes, unshoes, which are both types of minimalist shoes, barefoot, swim shoes, our guest shoes, and 1 whale tail. So it's a picture of their feet together. They've got minimalist shoes, water shoes, and then their guest shoes. And then a whale tail. I don't really know what the whale's tail is about. But yeah, I think it's a stuffed whale that one of the kids was holding or something that must have wound up in the picture.
Too funny. Photobombed.
I'm not really sure. Weugh is the last name. Filing another report at the beach barefoot. She is a reporter for NECN News. I'm not sure where that is located, but probably near a beach. John likes to run, says, relaxing with a cup of green tea, barefoot out the back. If only the northwest wind would disappear, it would be a lovely sunny day. So those are our tweets from the barefoot community. Remember, if you want your tweet read on the air, you can tweet me directly at Sierra Barefoot, S-I-E-R-R-A Barefoot, or just use the hashtag barefoot so I can find it. Our listeners have requested that we start talking about where we have gone barefoot this week. So I guess I will start that off. Let's see. I went to the post office and I went grocery shopping, filled up with gas, had a meeting with a social worker for a kid we were thinking about fostering, have visited said kid in his group home barefoot. What else? Where else did I go barefoot this week? Oh, I went out to a fancy restaurant barefoot. Not super fancy, not a 5-star restaurant or anything, but you know, nice enough that the menu prices start at $15 a plate for salad. Trying to think where else I went barefoot. I go everywhere barefoot. So basically, I'm just trying to think where I went this week. what about you, John? What did you do barefoot this week?
Well, everything that I was... when I went out, everything I did was barefoot. I wasn't out that much this week. But let's say today I went to breakfast and Lowe's barefoot, went into Big Lots barefoot. This week I've been out to dinner barefoot, into Walmart barefoot, twice at least. So just basic, pretty much it's, you know, not even a thought. If I'm going out, I'm barefoot. You know, it's rare. You know, there are those times, of course, where you have to consider it, but it's rare that I'm anything but.
Yeah, I go everywhere barefoot, so really that was more just remembering where I went this week.
Same
he
here.
Wants to wear his shirt.
Yeah. I did a count one time, and it's hard to really figure, but I tried to figure out the number of places in a day times the year, and it was well over 1,000 places a year barefoot. Some of them were the same places, but as far as visiting them.
I'm sorry, you went to how many places?
In a year, if you take how many places you go in a day and multiply it by a year, not individual places, but let's say individual occurrences of going out, well over 1,000. And that was just using my memory and going back to places I regularly go and then the other places I might have went a number of times.
Well, that would only be going 2 or 3 different places a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some days you don't. So, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. But it's like there's some days you're just not, at least for me, I'm not necessarily going out every single day.
Yeah, there are some days I don't leave my house. I work from home, you know. I don't have to leave the house. If I don't need to go somewhere, I don't. My office
exactly.
is a cushy recliner in my living room.
Yeah. But it was well over, like I said, it was well over in the thousands when I was trying to figure it out. But you don't think of that until you really sit down and start doing the math.
But yeah, and really, it's not like you're going to a ton of places in a day barefoot. I mean, like in an average week, I go to church, go to the farmer's market, go to the big grocery store, fill up with gas, go to the post office. That's about it. But you know, I usually at least check the mail every day. And because I live in the middle of nowhere, I have to go to the post office to do that. So I walk to the post office. It's about a mile round trip to the post office and back. Get my exercise, walk there. And I'm barefoot. And they're used to it. I did have a lady that worked behind the counter one time say that, you know, she thought it was cool that I was barefoot, and I've had people comment, they see me walking down the street, they're like, oh, you're barefoot, what is up with that, it's kind of cold, because today it's pretty cold and gross out today, and I'm still barefoot. We're going to be heading out to visit my in-laws this evening, and you know, I'll be going barefoot for that, like I always do. I'll have to, you know, stop it the gas station a couple times on the way there because they live 6 hours away. We're going for the whole Labor Day weekend. But, you know, it's once you overcome the fear of going barefoot in public, it's no longer a big deal. Like, it's not something that's scary. You're not risking, you're usually not risking being kicked out of somewhere. Because it's not illegal, it's not unsanitary. Like I don't see anything wrong with it. Most people don't. You might get those weird ultra conservative people that are freaked out by it. But for the most part, I think the tide is turning and people are starting to become okay about people going barefoot. For the most part.
I would agree.
And I mean, yes, there's extremists everywhere. You know, there are people who are going to hate on you and try to kick you out. And just like with any movement or group or something, there are going to be people in our barefoot community who are way more extreme than we are. Actually, I'm probably one of those more extreme people because I have this radio show trying to normalize barefooting. But that's not the point. There are people on the other side who are more extreme as well. And that's what I was getting at. The people that you encounter are a very small percentage of the population. I mean, it's so small I wouldn't even call them a percentage. Yeah. Like you said, you go barefoot 1,000 different occasions a year in public places, shops, restaurants, churches, weddings, whatever. How often does someone actually approach you and tell you that you can't be in there barefoot?
I haven't had that happen in a few years now. But then again, I have my flip-flops, so I do put that caveat out there. Not always.
I've been approached while wearing barefoot sandals, very rarely, but it has happened.
Yes.
You know, those aren't actually shoes. You can't be in here. I think it happened twice. And that was in my first year as a barefooter, so I didn't question it. But
amazingly to me,
like,
it hasn't happened to me.
Well, this was one of them was in like an upper scale restaurant, and the other one was in like a bulk candy store. And yeah, it was an interesting. But that was still in my first year of going barefoot. So that's, you know, I went and bought the barefoot sandals because I was kind of shy. And it wasn't really a big deal. I was like, yes, I can go out in public. I can be barefoot. No one's going to care. And those times that people still stopped me, it wasn't really a surprise because I was like, well, I am technically barefoot. But it doesn't happen anymore. I mean, I wore those flip-tops that you sent me to basically product test for you and put a review on my blog. I wore those for when I was down in Utah for the entire month of June. I didn't wear them everywhere, but anywhere I thought I might encounter issues. On the train, in Whole Foods, in Trader Joe's, because those are notorious areas for barefooters being confronted by staff. I think where else I went with it. I went to church. I went to church with my uncle, and he was like, it's not appropriate to be barefoot at church. Like, Moses went barefoot, don't even. But I put on the flip-flops to, you know, ease his level of comfort, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, it's been 5 years. Well, probably four years in between my first being kicked out of somewhere with wearing barefoot sandals, and then my experience with the flip-tops. To be fair, the flip-tops do look a lot more like shoes than the like little woven hemp things that I was wearing when I was getting kicked out of places. But I do think a lot of it is that attitudes are changing. People don't care anymore. There are bigger issues, you know? There's huge problems in the world with conflict and all the, you hear about the migrants dying, trying to escape their countries that they were born in where they were treated terribly, the Syrian refugees. I mean, there are bigger issues than the fact that I have no shoes on. And I think people are maybe starting to realize that, especially since we're kind of past the point where it's in the news. Because when Born to Run came out, when Dr. Howell's The Barefoot Book came out, it was in the news a lot. And so I think people were more aware of it. But now I'm thinking the tide is starting to turn where it's starting to become a part of our social collective consciousness that people go barefoot. And it's no big deal. Yes, there are still people that we need to reach out to. And that's what this radio show is for reaching out to those people who still think it's illegal to drive barefoot, who still think there are health codes prohibiting you from going to the grocery store barefoot, from going to restaurants barefoot, from working in restaurants barefoot even. I mean, I went to I went to Dairy Queen this week. That was one of the places I went, barefoot. I used to work at this Dairy Queen that I was at. I worked there 5 years ago, a little bit more than 5 years ago. And it was not a big deal if after we were closed, I took off my shoes. Pretty much everyone who worked there did, because shoes suck. Like, really, they're not great. And it wasn't a big deal, because there are no health code regulations against it. There are, if you are working around a deep fryer, you have to have B&K pot oil spills on you, because trust me, you do not want hot oil on your bare skin. It hurts. I've had it happen to me. I have a nice scar on my right arm about the size of a quarter from hot oil burning through my skin. But just serving someone food at a restaurant, unless you're serving them with your bare feet, it's not an issue. And if you're serving them with your bare feet, you probably do need to have no shoes on so you can have the dexterity of your toes. Anyway, that's...
Yep.
Yeah, that's the... That's how I think the tide is turning. It's not... As, it's not something that's scary anymore to people. It's getting through to people that it's not a bad thing anymore. We do need to take an ad break. When we come back, we've got some great articles about why kids need to go barefoot and what you can do to treat cracked feet. We get questions about that all the time. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you confused about what to do to get started on your path to preparedness? My book, Making the Best of Basics, Family Preparedness Handbook, is the number one all-time best-selling book ever on helping people become prepared or getting better prepared. Get a copy of my book and get it through Freedomizer Radio by going to makingthebestofbasics.com. Pick out what you'd like to buy. There are a number of alternatives. All Freedomizer Radio listeners can get it for one-half price. Special offer, when you're ready to check out, go down to the discount code, type in present, because it's a present I'm making to you, and it'll automatically discount the price by 50%. Such a deal. And you can learn more by listening to Dr. Prepper CPR, Critical Preparedness Radio talk show at Freedomizer Radio.
Hello, Freedomizers. Joanne Moretti here, inviting you to join my great co-host Scott Ferrarello and myself, as well as our many correspondents and colleagues, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that's noon Pacific, for Zone 13, the best fast-paced news, current events, and investigative report show on the web. We bring you the news the mainstream media won't. Please find us at freedomizerradio.com, where you can listen and chat. Again, please join us for Zone 13, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Hope to see you there, Freedomizers.
Did you see this? The EPA wants to regulate water in our ditches now. Our ditches are dry most of the time. There's hardly ever any water in them. That's enough.
Safe, that's what they say. It's what that's enough. The EPA and the Corps, they will strive to justify, but we won't back down. Don't need more government anyway. That's enough. Government anyway.
Tell the EPA it's time to ditch the rule. Ditchtherule.fb.org. This is a message from the Missouri Farm Bureau. Contact them at 573-893-1558.
Barefoot is Legal. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. We have an article here from blog.fsgate.com. It's just a mom's opinion post, basically, but it's absolutely amazing, I think. I found it on Pinterest earlier this week, actually. It's 6 years old, but it's still relevant. It's called Where Can Kids Get Their Hands Dirty? You know, there's lately, I think, been a lot less fear about germs than there has been maybe in the past decade. But for a lot of my childhood, I was surrounded by antibacterial soaps, antibacterial hand washes and hand sanitizers and wipes and air spray, and we Lysoled everything. And it's actually coming out with new research that if you aren't exposed to these things in small amounts, your body doesn't build up a tolerance to them, so you're unable to fight off the disease when you are actually exposed to big, huge quantities of these viruses and bacteria later. And that these antibacterial soaps and everything are killing off the weak ones, and the strong ones are mutating and becoming super bugs and killing everyone. So that's kind of the point of this article, written by a lady named Amy Graff. She says, our family recently spent a day in our garden pulling weeds and planting bulbs. The kids dug their hands into the dirt and made mud pies. By the end of the day, dirt was all over their clothes, in their hair, and stuck under their fingernails, which freaked out my daughter. Yuck, there's dirt under my nails. Help, mommy, help. My kids rarely get dirty. We live in San Francisco. Our backyard is small, and we most often play at the neighborhood park that's covered in a layer of rubber. But it turns out my kids should probably dig holes in the backyard more often. A recent New York Times article by health reporter Jane Brody makes the case that kids should get dirty. They should pet animals, walk around barefoot in the mud, eat food that's fallen on the floor, and skip the washing hand step before dinner. In studies, what is called the hygiene hypothesis, researchers are concluding that organisms like millions of bacteria, viruses, and especially worms that enter the body along with dirt spur the development of a healthy immune system. Several continuing studies suggest that worms may help to redirect an immune system that has gone awry and resulted in autoimmune disorders, allergies, and asthma. These studies, along with epidemiological observations, seem to explain why immune system disorders like multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, asthma, and allergies have risen significantly in the United States and other developed countries. So this is great. Dirt is good for kids. I can easily cut back on the antibacterial products and allow my kids to eat their pizza after it falls on the ground. But where am I supposed to get my kids dirty? Petting animals, making mud pies, digging holes in an urban environment? Here's a list of a few places. And she lists local parks in her area, petting zoos, farms, so things like that. But it's super important to let your kids be exposed to germs. We don't need to be obsessively cleaning everything. I mean, yeah, maybe it's not the best way to hand your kid a pacifier that's been dropped on the ground. I don't think we use pacifiers at all, actually, but you don't need to be obsessively sanitizing every surface that they're coming in contact with. And I think this article is fantastic in that it hypothesized that it might explain why immune system disorders, allergies, and asthma have significantly risen in the United States. Because we are no longer allowing our immune system to work properly, and so it starts to attack our body because it doesn't really know what to do. I just think that's amazing. What do you think of that, John?
I think you know what I think. We need to have that contact. Our bodies have 90 trillion microorganisms in and on them at all times. I know that freaks people out, but it's the fact. And if we didn't have most of them, we'd be dead. So,
I truly believe
we have to be in contact. Even more, I, as you know, without going into a long dissertation, I think it's essential, you know. Why is every organ in your body connected through your feet? There's got to be a reason.
You totally can go into a long dissertation if you want.
Well, for those that don't know my position on it, it's like microorganisms. Think about the human race all over the planet. How do we develop and change throughout history? I believe a lot of it is these microorganisms actually communicate to each other and make changes, and they're essential to us for our health, for just about everything that we have to have them. So, yeah, I'm definitely a believer in it. They also, I remember the article about the Prozac. They were saying that in dirt, it was actually an article on people that were doing gardening, but it's the same principle. In dirt, there's actually microorganisms that give the same effect as Prozac without any side effects. So you look at when people are upset and mad all the time and wonder why. In the UK, same reason they're having, there was I saw an article come back up again recently about a school that's doing a study where they're having the children go barefoot. And they're finding that they're doing better, they're behaving better, much better, you know. So one kid actually said, yeah, it's hard to get mad when you're barefoot.
Yeah.
So
we had them make a statement for our radio show before, because they're in the UK, the time zone doesn't obviously allow them to come on while the show is live. But one of the administrators for the school, I don't remember what her name was, and I can't find the email right now, but what she basically said was they let the kids decide to do it. They let the student government, they wanted to be barefoot, and they did. And they don't make anyone be barefoot if they don't want to be. They're allowed to wear shoes, but they don't have to. And they find that the kids who are not wearing shoes have better focus and get better grades. So
yes, exactly. And again, the behavioral side of it as well. They are better students. So it just makes sense. You know, all of the health benefits, if you're feeling better, you're going to be a happier person and not be the bully in the school. So hopefully that type of research gets out to the broader public and we see more of that.
We might have lost John. He's in a storm right now, so that could have cut out his phone. We have
Did I cut out?
Yeah. You're back now, though.
Okay.
Got an article here. Kind of shifting gears here. This is from KSL.com. It's a news station in Salt Lake. And they have a nurse come in. They call her Nurse Susie. They have a nurse come in about once a week and answer people's health questions. And this one was about tired, sore, cracked, and stinky feet. So she said, the world of health and medicine can be confusing to many patients. But Nurse Susie is here to help clarify some of the issues that are important to you and your family. Someone asked for suggestions for cracked heels. She says cracked heels actually occur because of the footwear we wear. It's easy to get cracked heels during the summer months. Some people also develop a dirty black layer of skin on their feet. And again, she says that's because of shoes. So don't be blaming my bare feet. Sorry, cranky child here. John, I'm going to forward this article to you. Check your messages really quick. I'll let you read this while I deal with...
Sure. Where are you forwarding it?
On your Facebook.
Okay.
Okay, I just sent you the link.
Okay, I'm opening it now, so please bear with me, literally. All right. And while I look for this, I was pleased to see, speaking of Sierra and her child, I don't know if it was this week or a past post, because I'm not really regularly on there, but I noticed she had a post out there with her child out in the public barefoot, and I've been kind of ribbing her about that lately, so I was glad to see that. I'm hoping my internet connection's still good, because it's not coming up. All right, let me try one other thing. Here we go. All right, here we go. Mommy Medicine, Treating Sore, Cracked, and Stinky Feet by Suzanne Carley, KSL.com contributor. And she's saying, Salt Lake City, the world of health and medicine can be confusing to many parents. But Nurse Susie is here to help clarify some of the issues that are important to you and your family. This week, do you have any easy suggestions for cracked heels? Answer, because of the footwear we wear, it is very easy to get cracked heels during the summer months. Some people also develop a dirty black layer of skin on their feet. And again, this is because of footwear. I have an easy suggestion to treat these conditions. But first, a word of caution, if you have diabetes, you need to be extra careful. When it comes to the health of your feet, consult your doctor for any treatment you want to try. If you do not pay attention to your foot health, you run the risk of life and limb. Treating cracked heels and blackened feet. She put down here an easy six-step solution. Put shaving cream on your feet. Never tried that. But then again, I really don't have too much of a cracked issue. In a bucket or sink, combine equal parts warm water with Listerine. Soak a small hand towel in the solution of water and Listerine. While the shaving cream is still on your feet, wrap the wet towel around your feet and let it sit for 30 minutes. After 30 minutes, use the towel to rub your feet. Some of the callus and discolored skin will rub off. Apply a healthy amount of lotion on your feet. After your foot bath, it's a good idea to spend at least 5 minutes drying your feet. You may want to be sure you do not put on socks and shoes while your feet are still wet, damp. This can cause bacteria growth and infection. Again, the point is that putting the shoes on is what's causing the bacteria growth and infection. Bacteria is not growing on bare feet so much. It's got to have that damp, dark areas to grow. Use the towel to pat your feet dry and be sure you also give your feet a break from sandals. Don't wear them every day. And apply lotion on your heels nightly to reduce cracking. So with that, you know, one of the things I found out is I used to have a problem with cracked heels. Mine would usually come more in late summer, early fall for some reason. But now that I've been going year-round barefoot, I really don't have a problem with it anymore. I truly believe it is when you're putting your feet into socks and shoes damp. And let's face it, it's not just when you come out of a shower that your feet are damp or your shoes are damp. Have you ever put a barefoot into a shoe without a sock, and already you can feel the moisture and dampness right in the shoe? So the point to this article really is the shoes are what's causing the problem. And I can attest that I truly don't get that problem anymore. I've got this little lava rock thing that occasionally around the edges I'll rub because I get a slight bit of cracking. But other than that, nothing like what I used to get. I mean, it was bad when I was going barefoot, not going barefoot, going barefoot, not going barefoot, back and forth, especially for me in the fall. Sarah, are you back?
Yes, I am. My worst experience in cracking, I actually was living in Utah with my worst experience in cracking, and that's where this article comes from. The climate there, it's a desert, so it's, I think, probably more prone to cracking because the air is so dry. But
yeah,
it was
a good point.
It was after a summer of wearing flip-flops on campus where they required shoes. I've talked about this many times. I went to a university that required shoes on campus. So I was wearing flip-flops every day. Here my feet were, like, soaking in their own sweat and then having all the moisture sucked out of them by this dry, arid desert. And I think that's what caused the cracking. You know, when I'm barefoot, I was barefoot in summer in Utah for all of June, no problems with cracking. I'm barefoot in the summer in Canada, and I don't have as much problems with cracking as I did with the, like, even in Utah, it's drier. My feet were drier, the skin was drier, and yeah, I'm going back next week, actually, for a few weeks for conventions and things like that. But I'll see again if it's different there. But I think a lot of it, A, environmental, and B, you're sticking your feet in things that aren't natural. That's going to cause problems. But like she said, there are things you can do. The shaving cream, I actually use shaving cream never. If I do feel like shaving my legs, I use hair conditioner because it softens the hair. But maybe that would work too, because what it does is it, like, softens your skin and makes your skin all nice and soft. And maybe that's why she recommends shaving cream. But what really struck me in this article, she talks about shoes and socks causing bacterial growth, infection, and cracked heels. I think that's so important to remember that it's not feet cracking on their own. It's the conditions you put them in.
Exactly. Definitely. I would agree 100%. And like I said, I could truly attest to that because mine used to crack terribly when I was going back and forth between being barefoot and not barefoot. So once I became year-round, I seldom have a problem. Sometimes around the edge, it'll get a little bit. Like, I've got, like, this little lava rock thing. I just rub that around there, and it's fine. That's the extent of it for me. But you're right.
Yeah.
Environmental as well. If you're living in the desert, things tend to crack in the desert.
Yeah.
The whole area is cracked, you know. So I can see that as well.
Sorry, my son's playing a video game on my phone. He thinks it's hilarious. It's got Plants vs. Zombies. It's his favorite game, too, and he loves zombies. I don't know where he might have possibly gotten that from. But he loves zombies, and he likes to let them eat the people's brains because then it makes the squishy, like, brain noise. So they're like, brain, squish, as they eat it. He thinks it's hilarious. So he doesn't actually try to fight the zombies. He just waits until
he wants them. Yeah. I don't know if you heard my comment. I don't even know if it's a recent post or not, but in doing some of my research this week, your blog happened to pop up, and I saw you had a picture of your son walking around barefoot. So I don't know. That was.
What were you
was
researching
that
my son came up?
I'm sorry?
What were you researching that my son came up?
No, you came up, your blog did. Just different articles on barefoot, trying to find something new. And, you know, after doing this for a while, you tend to find some of the articles that you've been over. You know, there's a lot of information out there, but you're really trying to find the new and unique things. And hit a dry spell for that recently.
Yeah.
So,
well, I've been trying to put new articles out that are original content, but I mean, there's not, until more research comes out, it's kind of just repeating the same things over and over again.
Yeah. The good news is they agree. You know, more and more health professionals, university studies agree on the benefits of going barefoot, how it helps your health, how it helps your heart, how it helps the free radicals, the whole bit. You know, all of them, you know, we could go on forever. The one thing you do find is the reason it's hard to find new is because they're agreeing. You know, it is that must point to something that's pretty concrete.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a lot of the challenge of people doing research on why you should go barefoot is because every site seems to be regurgitating the same information.
Yeah, at times. Yeah, definitely. Every once in a while you'll find something unique, but it's few and far between.
Yeah.
But hopefully, as you mentioned earlier, it seems like things are changing. And if more people are going barefoot, then maybe we'll go see some new things out there. Sarah, maybe you know the number, but I remember seeing recently that we had a huge surge in people joining the Society for Barefoot Living as well.
Yes, in the last 2 months, we've had 100 new members, I think.
That's really amazing.
Yeah.
That truly is. To me, the reason that's amazing is I've been in this for at least following it since the DSL days, which was Dirty Soul Society, which then turned into the current Society for Barefoot Living. And for the longest time, it just sat at like 900 or 1,000. It just sat there. And then it's only been really the last couple of years that you've seen this tremendous growth. So it's a good sign.
Yeah, it definitely is. I love that we're getting a younger generation, and I am that younger generation that's getting involved. Like, it's important to reach out to young people, though, because as we are getting older, we're kind of becoming what's going to shape society, and that's a big deal. And if people my age can get involved in this, then the movement might have hope of making some real progress.
Exactly. I think in our generation, getting past the stigma of people tying it to dirty and hippies and poor and all that makes it extremely hard to get past. But now that there's true, concrete scientific research coming out, I think the new generations will be more receptive. At least I hope so.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, I can't guarantee that my generation is going to be more open to going barefoot than your generation or my grandparents' generation or any other generation before me, for that matter. But we've kind of grown up in an age where information is always available to us. Most people my age had the internet growing up. And, I mean, I'm not, you know, not 100% of us did, because I had friends in high school who were just getting internet in high school. But as teenagers, you know, we had Google, we had ask.com, we had all of it. And so we've never lacked for a place to look up information. And now there's Google Scholar that you can go and type into Google Scholar, whatever you're looking for, and it'll pull up scholarly scientific studies of whatever you're looking for. You know, you go type into Google vaccines cause immune suppression, and it'll find something. It might not agree with what you're looking for, because I haven't actually, this is going down a rabbit hole, but I had someone tell me a few days ago that they didn't vaccinate their kids because vaccines are what cause immune problems and autoimmune things like multiple sclerosis and all that. But I wasn't able to find any, but I looked in Google Scholar, and I don't really know what this child is saying. Here, play with your zombies. okay. But yeah, you type into Google Scholar. Let's try it right now. Google Scholar. What comes up if you type in barefoot? He wants helicopters. That's what he's saying.
Why?
But, my computer just froze. So John.
Never heard of it.
But it's. There we go. Now it's loading. Google Scholar is fantastic. And if you're looking for something for like a research paper or whatever, scholar.google.com. I'm typing barefoot in there now and I'm seeing what's going to come up. A lot of scientific words.
Yeah.
Depression
I'm
and long-term mortality risk in patients with coronary artery disease actually is done by someone with the last name Barefoot. Apparently there are a lot of people with the last name Barefoot because that's all that's coming up.
I'm getting a little bit of that as well.
But anyways.
But I'll bet I'm going to spend some time here, not right this minute, but just to see what comes out of this. This is interesting.
Yeah. We do need to take an ad break, so maybe take a look while we're on the ad break. I have a couple more articles for us when we come back. Ways for you to incorporate grounding into your home and things that you can do to prevent plantar fasciitis. So stay tuned for that.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Your drink drops reverse.
I like the way you grow it. No pesticides. I got to box it up.
Box it up, yeah.
I like the way you grow it. So locally. I got to box it up. I like the way you grow it. With no GMOs. I like the way you twerk it.
No diggity.
No doubt.
We've got squash and peas. Calling it a pack for all your bees. Melons you wanna squeeze. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Hey, now that plant looks good.
I wanna grow it. I wanna taste it.
Search YouTube for Freaks of the Garden, peacefulbelly.com. Support your local organic farmer.
Would you like to take your power back through law of attraction and following the principles of the universal laws, earth-based spirituality such as Wicca, and sovereignty? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the government, the media, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and remember who you are? I am Reverend Joanna Johnston, an ordained minister, certified quantum healing hypnotherapist, law of attraction coach, NLP trainer, psychic intuitive for over 20 years, priestess and founder of the Illuminating Mind Society and Temple, here to guide you every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to inspire you and empower you to raise your vibration right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Call in number 347-324-3704.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. Were you able to find anything on Google Scholar about going barefoot, John?
I found a few things. You know, I haven't really had a chance to research and see what they're talking about. Barefoot in New Zealand, the politics of campus conflict. So I haven't really read any of these yet or different ones. But it'll be interesting to see. Maybe we'll get some new information out here. This might be a good place.
Yeah. I'm not finding any that are actually studies done by anyone other than people with the last name Barefoot. And a lot of...
I use quotation marks. Barefoot. Put in a quote on something you would look for. Like if you wanted barefoot running, type in barefoot running in quotes.
Okay.
Or whatever you may want, or health, or whatever. You know, try to put them in quotes.
There is one here from the District Courts of Massachusetts. Just out of curiosity. Let's see what comes up. It's a lawsuit against Vibram. Is what came up. And we've already talked about that. So, anyway, we'll go ahead and talk about what we're going to talk about. Since if you want to look up scholar.google.com, if you find anything fantastic on there that you think we should talk about on the radio show, email it to me, sierra@barefootislegal.org. We'll be happy to share that with you. But here's an interesting thing that I found this week. It's called Immaculate Mini Lawn in Your Loo is the name of the article. It's on yankodesign.com. And I thought that'd be a great way to incorporate grounding or earthing inside your home, you know, for people like me who don't leave their house every day. So they say walking on fresh grass increases your blood circulation. Anyways, it's a great reason to get going to the nearest park, remove your expensive Jimmy Choo's, and prance around. I'm guessing Jimmy Choo's. The moss carpet looks at getting the grass to your feet. And that, too, in your loo. Loo being, you know, bathroom for us North American people. Made from foam called plastizote, the mat includes ball moss, island moss, and forest moss. The humidity of the bathroom ensures that the mosses thrive there. And that's why you need to place it there and not somewhere else. And so it's a bath mat. So like when you get out of the shower, water drips off of you. That waters the moss. And it grows in your bathroom. And then you can stand on this moss while you are getting ready in the bathroom or whatever. So that's an interesting idea. What do you think, John? Something you want to buy?
A lot easier to clean the bathroom, maybe, and not have to worry about getting the floor perfect.
Well, yeah, if your bathroom floor is made of moss, you don't have to worry about dirt being in there.
You want dirt in there, then.
Exactly.
Too funny.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, I don't think I would actually go for it because I think my son would destroy it. But it's an interesting. interesting idea. I think if it was an all-adult home, and for someone who couldn't leave their house because they have restricted mobility, or they're a social recluse, or whatever, you know, I think that would be a great, great way to get some of the natural grounding. I think that maybe not more practical than grounding sheets, but more fun, for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You can buy grounded sheets that you plug into your grounding hole in your wall socket, and it'll ground it somehow. They have like metal fibers woven into it, and I don't really know how they work, but apparently they can help ground you. But
yeah,
this lawn is more fun.
Yeah, they're typically being plugged into the ground, like you have your plugs in the wall, a little ground outlet.
True.
And we were talking about that barefoot school a little bit earlier. In the Barefoot Lethbridge group, which I'm part of, they shared a link about it. So I'm just gonna briefly go over that for people who might not know about it. Primary school children have been told to wear only socks for lessons after shoes were banned in an attempt to improve children's results. Holmbush Primary School in Shoreham, West Sussex, declared that children should study barefoot after the school's learning council, made up of year six pupils, found that shoeless classrooms could help people learn. After a trial, which was deemed successful by children and staff, the 240 pupil school's governors agreed to make the policy official, and Holmbush became a shoeless official school in January this year. The unusual philosophy, which originated in Scandinavia, where shoes bring in slush, snow, and ice, suggests that children both learn and behave better when their feet are unrestricted by shoes. And actually, at the elementary school in my tiny Canadian town, there is a sign that says, please remove your dirty shoes. Pupils are said to be gentler with each other, concentrate better, and other benefits include cleaner and more hygienic carpets. Pupils at Holmbush, which is deemed good by Ofsted, are allowed to go barefoot or to wear socks and slippers whenever they are in the school building, and only put on school shoes when they head outdoors to play. Mistress Rebecca Jackson said shoeless classrooms were brought in to improve learning. However, children and staff discovered one downside of the shoeless learning last week when a fire alarm sounded and the children piled out into the wet playground in their socks. Some parents and carers were upset that the children got their feet wet as a result, with one grandmother of a five-year-old at the school saying, it's absolutely ridiculous. Three pupils were ushered out the door without their socks, and my grandson stood there on a soaking wet playground in just his socks. And I don't agree that they should have made them go outside in the rain in their socks. That's something that they should have had a contingency for. But
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with anything else they're doing.
And again, if they just took the socks off, they wouldn't have had a problem.
If they'd taken the socks off, or if they'd put their shoes on as they were heading out.
Well, in a fire drill, you probably don't want to have that as a policy, really.
Well,
you wouldn't.
Yes and no.
You wouldn't want to slow it up.
If it's cold weather, you don't want kids out there with no shoes on. That can actually be dangerous.
It can be dangerous, though, if it's a real fire, to leave them inside. So maybe during a drill, they might want to do that. But if, you know, in a real fire, they sure wouldn't want to do that.
Or perhaps have them grab their shoes as they head out the door, and then they can put them on outside or something.
Something.
But yeah, they need to have a contingency plan with that. But yeah, one of the girls was upset. She said when they came back into the school, they had to take their socks off. So when we went to collect them, nearly all of them came out wearing shoes and no socks. It's just disgusting. There's so many health hazards about kids walking about in socks on wooden floors and chair legs slamming on their feet. But the reassurance we've been given is that posters are no longer stuck on walls with drawing pins. Even in hospitals, you're not to walk around barefoot because of health and safety implications. I think this is one of those people we talked about earlier that is going to be against barefooting no matter what, because they are...
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the teachers said at that instance, during the afternoon, children with wet socks or tights were given spare dry ones, and theirs were dried. So the kids didn't have to go out with no socks and just shoes, because that's gross. But I don't know. I think maybe that grandma was possibly overreacting. But yeah, they should look at a contingency plan for if that happens in the future. What if it is snowing?
Yeah, maybe the contingency plan is put the lockers outside.
put the lockers outside. Or maybe only wear slip-on shoes to school, so it's easy to slip them on as you're heading out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of schools have uniforms already. Lots of schools require certain types of shoes as part of their dress codes. My middle school required shoe policies that no one listened to because I wore flip-flops every day. But we were supposed to have... They weren't supposed to be open-toed, and they weren't supposed to be open-backed. But it was Florida, and nobody listened to that. And really, as long as we showed up, they didn't really care. But anyway, we're getting off topic. Kind of, but yeah. As promised, some tips to prevent plantar fasciitis. One of my friends a few months ago told me, oh, I could never go barefoot. I have plantar fasciitis. So we're going to talk about plantar fasciitis, because that's something that comes up in the barefoot community a lot. Cracked heels and plantar fasciitis. I feel like those are the biggest concerns people have with going barefoot. But this is from Runner's World, the trainers from Runner's World, and it was posted on active.com. The trainer is Irene Davis. She's a PhD in physical therapy, and she's the director of the Spalding National Running Center and the Harvard Medical School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So she says that you should do these exercises barefoot, because doing them barefoot will increase your strength in your feet. Plantar fasciitis is a runner's recurring nightmare. It's a notoriously stubborn injury that strikes when the thick band of fibers that runs along the bottom of the foot becomes inflamed. It often starts as a minor irritation, but can advance and develop into a sideline injury, especially if it's not treated promptly or properly. While ice, rest, orthotics, and pain relievers may ease the discomfort, it doesn't actually cure it unless you address the underlying cause, weak and tight muscles and tendons that make up the support of the foot. And they get weak and tight because you aren't training barefoot, sticking them in shoes, immobilizing those muscles and tendons, and they're not working, so they become weak. And so that's why the cure to them is to train barefoot. And John, I'll let you have your say about plantar fasciitis after we go through this article, because I know you have
sure
experience with that. So the exercises for the physical therapy barefoot every day for about 10 minutes a day to cure your plantar fasciitis, according to this physical therapist. Well, she says treat the underlying cause, which if you fix the underlying cause, would, in my mind, would make that go away. So exercise number one, calf raises. That's where you stand and then just go up on your tiptoes. And that strengthens the tendons in your heels and your calf muscles. Those are the muscles that support your arch. So you just go up and down on your tiptoes. Step stretch. So you balance with the front half of your foot on a step. And you kind of allow your weight to lean onto your heels. Press your toes into the ground and let your heels kind of lean back. This will stretch your Achilles tendon and your calf. Doming, which is where your heel and your toes are touching the floor, and then you like arch your foot up. That will work the arch muscles and the tibialis posterior, which is in the calf and the foot. That will control excess pronation. Pronation is when your feet, instead of pointing straight forward, they go out to the side. Toes spread and squeeze. Stick a rubber band around your toes. Spread them and then squeeze them back together. And that will target the muscles in the foot that support the arch. Towel curls are another one she recommends. Put a towel on the floor and scrunch it with your toes towards you, and then push it back with your toes. That will work the toe flexor muscles that run along your arch to increase overall foot strength. And those are the exercises that she recommends. So stretching your calf, your Achilles tendon, your arch muscles, basically doing anything with your feet. My son has started picking things up with his feet because he's been seeing me do it. I think it's just hilarious. But John, you have some experience with plantar fasciitis. So why don't you tell our listeners about your experiences with plantar fasciitis?
Sure. I had it bad. Mine was to the point where, and this was literally going back about 25, 30 years now, but mine was to the point where if I was sitting in a chair and had to get up, I was looking for things to grab onto, to hold, because I knew I was going to be in excruciating pain as soon as I stood up. And I went on the internet. It was fairly new at the time, to be honest. It's back when you got on through the phone and it made funny noises as you pinged on. It was super slow. That's the one. That shows you how far back. But anyways, there was articles that were starting to come out, and most of them said if you have plantar fasciitis, definitely don't go barefoot. And they were talking about insoles and exercises, orthotics, the whole bit. But then I did find a small, as Sierra knows, I'm the type that's just going to keep digging and digging and digging for articles. And I did find a small group of articles that talked about what you really want to do is go barefoot. And the logic just made sense to me, especially the logic that compared how our feet are like a shock absorber. So if you come down on your forefoot, that's just like a shock absorber works. If you come down on your heel, that's just pure shock going up your body. So it made perfect sense to me. And I tried it, and it took a while, and I kept doing it. It didn't feel like it was doing anything, but for some reason I stuck with it. And then one day I realized I don't have pain anymore. It was just sort of, it happened gradually, but it hit me at a point where it's like, it's gone. There's none at all. And then over the years, because of societal pressures, I'd have to wear shoes, and then I'd have times of going barefoot and have to wear them. And the more times that I had to have long stints of wearing shoes, the pain would come back. So it is something that you have to keep up with. Even now, if I have to put shoes on for a while, sometimes I can notice a twinge, but since I do go barefoot so often, it goes away very quickly. So there may be people that disagree with it, but when you experience something yourself, you're definitely more of a believer, it amazed me, because there's people that get plantar fasciitis and go into painful operations, and I can't even imagine. So if something as simple as just going barefoot solves it, sure worth a try.
Yeah, well, it's, like you said, people getting surgeries and they're super painful. I have a friend who might be getting a surgery for something that I think is unnecessary, but her doctor's recommending, and she's not willing to try natural things until the surgery because that's what her doctor's recommending. I am currently in the process of getting my certification to become a natural health consultant so I can help people get on the right vitamin supplements with essential oils, massage, art therapy, dance therapy, movement therapy, that kind of thing. That's what I'm working on at school right now. And so I'm giving her advice about what she should try. And she's like, well, I'll try that after. And it doesn't make sense to me that people are not, most of the time, are not willing to try natural, simpler, less dangerous things first. Because really, I mean, walking barefoot, natural, simple, free, easy, pretty much pain-free. I mean, yes, with plantar fasciitis, it's going to be painful because you're retraining your muscles. Retraining anything in your body is painful. I've been working on training my brain to stop craving sugar. That's emotionally painful. Retraining any habit in your life. There's a saying, there's no comfort in a growing zone, and there's no growing in a comfort zone. Yes, your orthotics might be comfortable, but you're not actually fixing anything. You might be actually making it worse because you're immobilizing your foot even more. Those orthotics are not flexible. I had to get orthotic, well, I was told to get orthotic inserts. I probably didn't have to, but I was told to get orthotic inserts by a podiatrist. She said my going barefoot was helping a lot, but I have joint issues caused by a car accident I was in. My spine's all wonked up. My hips are out of alignment. And so she told me that orthotics would help and that I would need to wear the orthotics for a year. That was last summer. Yes, my feet don't pronate as much and still in pain, though. So I don't think the orthotics actually help. But, yeah, natural orthotics are pretty natural, but I don't think the philosophy behind them is fully thought out. By immobilizing your foot, I don't think it actually heals it. It just treats the symptoms. And that's a lot of modern medicine does. It treats symptoms instead of root causes. Like, don't get me wrong, I think treating your cancer is fantastic, but chemotherapy doesn't actually treat or cure cancer. It kills the cancer cells, which is why it comes back so often, because it wasn't ever cured. It was just treated. And I don't know how this is going to work for them, but I have a friend right now who he had brain cancer, and they might have just found another tumor. He has an MRI to confirm it. But they've decided that if it is back, they're not going to do chemotherapy. They're going to do essential oils and prayer and healthy eating. And I mean, I don't know how it's going to work out for them, but I mean, the chemotherapy didn't work, obviously, the first time if it's back. So I don't think there's anything wrong with trying something more natural. It's, I mean, brain tumor's probably going to kill you either way, but you might as well try what's going to have less side effects first, in my opinion. There's the Occam's razor. The simplest answer is often the best. And a lot of times, we're finding now, natural cures often are better than what modern medicine has created.
Definitely.
Sorry, I just monologued there.
No, that's definitely true. I think, you know, as we've progressed, you know, as far as people and society and, quote, separating ourselves from the animals, there's probably been, you know, quite a bit of something that man created is a good thing, and this is how we're going to fix things, and this is why we're going to do, you know, they've separated themselves from nature is what I'm trying to say. We've tried to distance ourselves from, you know, the other, quote, animals on the planet. So I think sometimes, you know, we've definitely distanced ourselves way too far. You can't solve everything with a pill. You can't, you know, solve everything by putting a piece of foam in your shoe. You know, you have to understand the underlying causes and how things work. And again, biomechanics. If you think of it, you don't have to know biomechanics. All you have to do is be somebody that might be fairly good at understanding mechanics and alignment of parts and how things are going to wear out, just like the alignment on your car. If you get new tires, you're going to get an alignment on your car. You're foolish if you don't. And because they're going to be going down the road and they're not going to be straight and true, and they're going to be causing wear. Well, we get that same wear not only on our feet when our bodies are out of alignment because they're in shoes, but on every joint all the way up our body. It's not in the right place. So it's pretty important. You wouldn't do it with your car. Why do it with yourself?
Yeah. That's a great analogy, I think. Because if you get your tires on out of alignment, it can mess up your shocks in your car. And if you think about it, every joint in your body is a shock absorber. So if you are messing up your shocks, you're messing up every joint in your body, your ankles, your knees, your hips. Your back is one big series of joints. Your shoulders, your neck. I mean, it's going to mess up everything. And as I've been taking this natural health course, everything ties in together. It's not just one thing that you're doing is going to make it better or worse necessarily. I mean, yeah, you might be eating all organic and think, oh yeah, it's going to make me so healthy. But you're still doing a lot of unhealthy, like you're wearing shoes and you're smoking organic, all natural tobacco. I mean, no GMO tobacco there, but I mean, and then maybe you have self-destructing thoughts too. It's all tied in together. You know, the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health, they're all interrelated. And so if you're doing something that's physically bad for you, you're going to feel bad emotionally. And if you're doing something that's emotionally bad for you, you're going to feel bad spiritually and physically. It's when you find that whole balance that you totally in tune and healthy and you feel better 100% everywhere in your body, your mind, your soul, everywhere. And I think that's something that as a whole, our society has lost touch with. And going barefoot, I mean, not everybody sees it as a spiritual thing. A lot of people do it for the comfort. But getting so intimately in touch with the earth, if you think about it, the earth is so tied into us. How can we not be connected to it? It grows our food. It grows the food that feeds the animals that we eat. We walk on it. We live on it. It's got
it
the water.
It has the same frequency of our brain.
How can that not be a spiritual experience for you? Think about it. But you're still, that connection is still there. I mean, even if you don't believe in God or a higher power or whatever, that spiritual connection to the earth is undeniable.
And again, I know we're running out of time, but the humans are... Earth has the same frequency as our brains. Is that a coincidence?
I don't think so.
No.
I think it's because we're meant to be in tune with the earth.
Exactly.
Anyways, yes, we're out of time. We're down to about a minute left. Thank you, everyone who listened. Thank you to everyone who will listen to the podcast version of this in the future. If you are listening to radio.com, make sure you refresh the page so you can get the next broadcast right at the top of the hour. Hit that refresh button and the new show will load. We love you. Thank you for listening. Stay barefoot. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Seri Indian tribe, well, Native American tribe, and they were a group that went barefoot. So make sure you tune in for that. They are a fascinating people. Stay barefoot, stay happy, stay safe. John, watch out for lightning. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. We'll all right, take care, stay there. See you next week. And send me the link on that tribe so I can do some of the research.
Will do.
Thanks. See you all next week. Hear you all.